Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Bowlology Report. Damien Fleming, as always, a big Bowlology Report here. Australia and England T20 series, IPL starting up, CPL finals. Also, how's the Australian schedule going to go with COVID still lingering around? Joining me, as always, co-host with the most S, doesn't even rhyme, Pete Hanscom. How you going, Pete?
Great, Flem, mate. It's good to be back here again.
It is. And I tell you what, we've had some big guests, but none bigger than this one, Pete.
I'm excited about this.
I've done a bit of work on this one. Australian comedian, musician, children's writer. You've been watching him on the front bar over the winter on Channel 7. Cricket-wise, he's most famous as the Melbourne Stars Chief Hydration Officer from 2011 to 2019. The Cricket Bible, Wisden, describes him as a tall, spindly customer who consistently tested the wits of all his illustrious Big Bash career. He was Australia's first true Chief Hydration Officer. His BBL career spanned 8 years. Throughout this time, Wisden said his accuracy, his lion-hearted endeavour, his phenomenal promptitude to the wicket to hydrate stars like Warne, KP, Malinga, Hanscom made him a much revered figure. One feels if he was filling this role in the 2005 Ashes series, the Aussies would have won 5-0. It's a big rap from Wisden. We're a big rap for him, Pete. It's the light-footed Andy Lee.
Oh, what an intro. Thank you, Flem. You have clearly got my notes written by my PA and obviously through the editing process, we've got to the perfect kind of intro. No, it's all true. And Petey, I will always serve you, mate. Whatever kind of water you want, no matter how much hydrolyte you want in it, I'm here ready to go.
You're always the best, Ando. You got out there faster than anyone else. Your ability to carry 12 drinks in one hand and still run faster than Usain Bolt, mate, was just bloody brilliant. And we were lucky to have you on our team.
He's being kind, Flem. We used to have some running races, Pete and I, and Pete would get me, but a lot of the other players wouldn't. And that's what I love about cricket. It gives the non-athletes a fighting chance, the game of cricket, I reckon.
Well, have you seen those challenges Darren Lehman used to do? He used to pick the slowest player from the opposition team and sort of take him on.
Oh, really?
He never won. but Andy, how did you get involved with the Stars originally?
It was, a really fortunate time, and I'm really grateful for all the jokes about how important I was in the team. I was just super grateful. It was Warnie. People mightn't remember this, but the start of the Big Bash, they contemplated having celebrity players. They didn't think the comp was going to be probably as serious as it got, and it got serious really quickly. So year one, I was actually a registered player. I think it might have been... What year would have been 2011, 2010 to 2011? Yeah. So I was a registered player, and the idea would be that I would play a game at some point. If it wasn't batting or bowling, at least have a field. And so it was perfect timing for me. I'd come off finishing the radio show. Hamish and I finished that up in 2010. My girlfriend had just left me at the time. And so it was Warnie that reached out and said, oh, we'd love you to be a part of the Stars. That's what we're doing. And yeah, to go along and to train with them for all summer, travel with them. I remember Greg Shippard, who obviously was the coach at that point, recently won it with the Sixers, I think. He didn't particularly warm to me, Flem, early on.
You're a competitor in the stand-up comedy space for Ship.
Yes, yeah. You know how he's very good in that realm. Pretty serious guy, but we got to know each other and had a great relationship as well. But about game four, Warnie wanted to come off for a dart. We were a couple of people down and Warnie yelled out, "Andy, come on." And Ship turned to me and said, "There's no effing way you're going." And that's when I realised I might be running the drinks for the entire time.
That would have been the chance. I think I went on instead. I was 12th man there for a couple of years, and we had our fun there.
Yeah, we did.
I reckon that was in Sydney when Warnie came off. I went on and dropped the cash, so maybe you should have gone on instead.
Yes. Well, that's why Pete and I became good friends, and that's why I say I'm grateful. Like, obviously, as a cricket fan, that kind of access to being that close to the way everyone prepares and also the way everyone goes about the game. I loved that, but then good pals to come out of it. And there was a really great group of larrikins in there with Bobby Quiney and Pete and Luke Wright. And I think there was a bunch of us that had started at the start and that continued for a long time.
And did you find, I used to always see bowling in the middle in the warm-up and all that. Did you find your cricket, mainly your bowling, improved a fair bit too?
Oh, out of sight. Out of sight, particularly in the first 2 years. People will laugh at me here, but I remember I'd stopped playing at around 21, 22. Used to play down sub-districts for Bourne, and Hamish and I started radio, and we were on Saturday morning, so that I gave up cricket to do radio. I still think if I'd kept with cricket, it would have been more fruitful than whatever Hamish and I got up to, but sliding doors. Having not picked up a ball or done much at all, the occasional T20 knockabout with pals or an indoor cricket match, it was fun to go down and try again. And I'm not quick at all, but I certainly did add pace, and it's having real coaches around. And I certainly I was good enough for throwdowns for the good batsmen like Pete. In fact, Petey, when he was coming through, he'll testify to this. A lot of the bowlers, Pete, didn't want to wait for you to go into bowling, so you were left with me bowling to you a couple of times.
It was the perfect practice. You'd come in, put it right on a good length that I could just try and hit you back over your head. It was
the confidence builder. That's what I was.
Awesome. It was awesome. Who'd you you say you got better, so who'd you gravitate to then? Who was your coach or your guiding light in terms of a player that got you, probably from, let's say, 105 Ks to about 115?
Yeah, that's pretty much where it got to. Yeah, it was. Look, Mickey Lewis. He took me under his wing. He was great. And what was fun was, I remember bowling to Hodgie and bowling to Maxwell. That was really fun, but, way too easy for them. I remember Maxie yelling out to me, "Where's your field?" And I said to him, "I've got no one on the leg side. No one. No one on the leg side. I've got keeper and full ring on the offside." And he goes, "Okay." And I came in and tried to bowl a wide Yorker, and I thought that I'd executed it perfectly. He hit it between his legs. He swatted it down through his legs to square leg for four. And I was like, "Okay, I clearly don't have enough pace here." But I had enough nip to trouble the tail enders. So Clint McKay, whenever his batting practice was happening, I could certainly get him out a number of times, which is good fun.
Yeah, John Hastings as well maybe would have... tried to clear the fence a couple of times. I reckon you nicked him off.
Yeah, nicked him off, although I was so scared with the way he wound up that the ball was coming back at me. I don't think I put the effort ball in. I was always releasing and then just covering myself.
Yeah, his hands go up so high. He's just like, "Oh, no, this is coming back at some serious pace."
Yeah.
What about, did the Yorker improve? Did you grab the ear of Lasith Malinga and have a bit of a chat to him?
Malinga, and again, Pete, you may have said this on the podcast already, but Malinga was a fascinating beast because he would bowl no more than 12 balls per training session.
If that.
If that, yeah. And this is bona fide. He would come in, and what he would do was pretty awesome. He'd come in, he'd sling down two fast Yorkers, two slow ball Yorkers. There's four there. He'd bowl two bumpers, then two slow ball bumpers. And then that would normally be his chance to go to the massage table. But if he had to go a bit longer, he might bowl a length ball and then one more Yorker, and that was him. It was incredible. And he'd nail it every time. Like, we had him at his peak. I remember Cam White telling me that, it was kind of sad that the Stars didn't get the job done during that period, because there was no bowler like him. He was going, he was getting 4 for 6 and 4 for 7. Yeah. So it was pretty extraordinary when you could count on having four overs of not going for any runs and a few wickets. It doesn't really come about these days. Probably more the mystery spinners it happens to. One day I said, "Oh, look, Lassie, I want to face you. I want to face your bowling." And he's like, "All right, okay." I think it was at Etihad, and Jimmy Faulkner was coming out of the nets, and I was coming in. And Jim said, "Why the hell do you want to be doing this? You know, I don't want to be in here." No one really wanted to be in there facing him for training. Jim would face two of them and then tell him to F off to another net. That's how Faulkner kind of tackled his training. But I went down, and Malinga said, you want to see one? You want to see one first?" And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll see one first. So I kind of stood just, a little bit outside leg. Anyway, I didn't see it. And I quickly thought that was a bad idea, so I didn't bother going on facing it.
Mate, I was petrified facing him in the nets. We all were, just like Jimmy says. That's bloody true. Like, I reckon I faced him once. I mean, he only bowled limited balls, but, yeah, it was Yorker. But he was good because he'd look after you. His bouncer was always a foot over the head because he had that accuracy. And then in the game, he'd just lower it by a foot and absolutely get it on the badge.
You talked about the meticulous preparation of Malinga, Andy. No doubt SK Warne took a similar approach.
You know what I found great about Warne? He's still good mates now, but he's so good that he gives a lot of confidence to a team, but also sometimes he can't see why others aren't as good as him. And so when in his, kind of coaching, well, he's certainly good, particularly with X-factor players, but I don't think he'd mind me saying at times with someone who's perhaps struggling a little bit, he can't quite see why, because he's just so bloody good. So he'd ask some things of some players that I don't think had the weaponry, and then sometimes go to me, "Oh, God, this guy, what's he doing?" And I was like, "Well, we can't all be as naturally gifted as you, buddy."
What a beauty. Hey, do you have a – I mean, all greats leave a legacy in any sphere of the world. We thought with Warne, would prompt a generation of blonde leg spinners. That hasn't come to happen. What about the chief hydration officer? You left a strong legacy. We haven't seen anyone, rise from the ranks. Do you have a guide or key factors to being a chief hydration officer?
Yeah, well, I think similar to Warne, it's a lot of natural talent. So, it's going to be very difficult for someone to come along and be able to run with the, precise nature that I did. The for young hydration officers out there, I'd say your job, people think when the game's over, your job's over. It's just absolutely not the case. And people understand this. It changes, the lubrication changes, but as soon as you're in the rooms and there's access to an esky and or fridge, it's your role to make sure everyone has beer in hand as soon as possible. And that was where I probably excelled and kept the team on side. So a lot of great stuff out in the middle, but my off-field work was particularly good as well.
That was it. It was the behind-the-scenes stuff, Ando, that that really got you in favour amongst the boys. I mean, there were times where I'd come off or we'd come off after celebrating a win, sign a few autographs, get down into the rooms, and there's already a cold beer waiting on your seat, uncapped, ready to go. And now that's, you just can't teach that kind of stuff, Ando. That's just brilliant.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, I really appreciate that. That was the thing, Flem. So, and that's, look, there was, obviously I could have gone on for several more years, but I knew that it was important to step out of the top of my game. Although I did do it, I think, for 7 years. That was shocking.
I put 8 at the start. It looked like that. Hey, now you both got caps on. What's the hats? What's the story here?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm surprised to see Pete. I mean, my brother would be so proud of Pete right now. But I'm surprised to see. I'm glad I put mine on. But, yes, there's one rivalry that's bigger than, India, Pakistan, Australia and England and all the derby and the Big Bash. It's my brother's mates versus my mates in our annual cricket match. We tried to play 3 a year. Normally gets reduced to 1. And you're allowed 1 international. And my brother's team's the Beamers and my team's the Mancats. I don't know why we've both got names that are based on the most heinous thing you can do in cricket. But for people that can't see it, ours was a royal blue cap. It says bowl bat beat on the front of the coat of arms, and it's like the SAS coat of arms, but instead of a gun, it's got a bat in the middle. I actually think the Beamer's cap is better. It's a crest with a box in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Cricket box. Yeah. And it just says, "We destroy the box," and there's a ball going straight at it. And Pete was part of the Beamers. I think you had success, Pete, in the games that you played. My mate Tom Bayfield, my brother-in-law now, since married my sister, probably after this game, got you out. An out swinging wide of a length delivery that Pete cut straight to point, caught by my friend Tom Bayford. I think for about 16, where Bobby Quiney had made the required 30 retired for our team. So we were very pleased to get in that game.
It was a real low for me, that that Ando. I'd really come in with high expectations. The team had been talking me up and wanting me to do well. And I come out and, 16, okay. It's sort of, gets you going. But, Bobby really showed me up there, big left-hander, long levers, cleared the boundary a couple of times, which, put me to shame.
So what are the rules? What balls are you using? How many overs?
Full cricket rules, 2020, full cricket rules. My dad's the umpire. Impossible to get an LB out of him. Like he same back when he used to umpire under 12s for me. But it was just...
What's the standard call for an LB? Going down late or pitching outside off?
Well, we're playing on synthetic, so it was so easy for him to say going over the top just for anything, even if it was on its way down still.
We did find out, though, we found out who the favourite son was, because Ando it's come off the middle of the bat straight to the keeper. Like, you couldn't believe it. Loudest thing ever. And Mick just goes, "Nah, not out. Play on, boys. Thanks for coming." And the uproar. You should have seen Cam and his brother. Like, we really found out the love affair there.
Oh, God. You're right. You're right, Pete. I did nick it. Dad looked at me and I shook my head. And I've never lied to my dad my entire life, Slim. Like, growing up, couldn't do it. I just didn't. Cam did the whole time, but I couldn't. If I'd done something wrong, I would have told Dad by 10 p.m. at night, "Can't sleep, go in there." So he looked at me, and we were in trouble at the time, and I just shook my head. And my brother walked from mid-on, walked up and said, "Walk you, C-bomb." and I said, "Mate, I'll walk if I hit it." And so we had words, and it got all a bit fiery. And I got a single, went down the other end and said to my dad, "Dad said, you didn't hit that, did you?" And I said, no. And I just didn't want that list. But we went on to win that. I think I got the required 30 retired, and we went on to win that one. It cost us a bit that game, though, Flem, because Bobby put 2 big sixes out of the park onto this guy's car roof. he'd come across and had a go at me. I was scoring at the time, and he's like, you need to pay for my car. And I said, "No, mate, you've parked it there. It's a public oval. Bad luck." And as he was arguing with me, Bob put another one on his roof. And it bought the house. Like, it bought the house down. Like, everyone, fielders and batting bowling teams, both on the ground laughing. But this guy contacted the council and tried to sue us for the damages. So we ended up having to, we argued a little bit, and Hamish wrote a very funny letter trying to get out of it. But we ended up, Ham and I ended up footing his repair bills for his car, and didn't talk about it
afterwards.
Oh, wow. I told you that, Pete.
What's the score update? Do you keep how many wins your brother's team's had or yours? And do you hand over? Like, it's funny enough.
Yeah.
Today, 167 years ago, the demon, Fred Spofforth, was born. And his 14 wickets in the 1888 Ashes series, you know, inspired the Ashes. What do you guys do?
We play for a smashed Ashes. It's a replica Ashes, but it's been smashed up. And it was broken after the Beamers celebrated one night, and one of my brother's mates, Billy Day, glued the entire thing back together. Incredible. It's very close. It sits at around about 4 versus 5. The Beamers had a hot run for a while there, my brother's team. But it's been hard to get back out there. We normally have one training session before the season starts each. And it was getting a bit dark, and one of my brother's mates, we trained together, but one of my brother's mates said, Hutch said, "Hey guys, it's getting a bit dark. Can you slow down the bowling?" So my brother's mate, James Nerdy, comes in just to give a bit of practice, slows it down. Ball comes straight back at him, hit him in the nuts, took off the top of his testicle like a cracked egg, and he had to go to hospital, and so he hasn't played since. He's too scared of it. And as the guys get older, he's since had a kid, though, so it still works, but as the guys get older, it's a bit harder.
So just pick guys that have already got kids. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Don't take a risk. Hey, boys, that's awesome. I tell you what, we've got a little segment on here that we tend to rename every episode because I forget what it was called the week before, but it's time for Pete's Newsweek.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Flem. That title's getting shorter and shorter each week, which is a lot easier.
But the music's just as good there, Flem. I really like it. It gives an air of importance to it, and that it deserves.
A bit of old BBC, yep.
Yep, but to start us off, I think the big news in the week, England-Australia, the T20 International Series over in England. Great to see Australia playing cricket, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. Bloody awesome to see the boys over there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, putting everything on the line. Unfortunately, going down 2-1 in the overall series. And it was tough, I think. You know, after that game one, you know, England won by 2 wickets. Australia in a great position chasing. You know, obviously England was set up there by Milan and Butler. And then Finch and Warner get Australia going. Unfortunately, have a middle order collapse. And our mate Stoyne, Ando, just couldn't get the boys over the line at the end, needing 6 or 4 to tie, 6 to win off the last ball, and a nice little York from Tom Curran just got it done.
I stayed up and watched this one, and oh it hurt, Flem. And I love Stoyne, love Oil, but he just let it go too late. It might be time for an older, wiser head to get in there, like a Dan Christian or someone that can manage the balls. I mean, he knows the areas over there. But yeah, it was nice to see them win the last one, but. It was as bad a finish as I've seen. When we needed, I think it was 46 off 40 balls or something.
40 off 39 at one stage.
Should be hurt from there.
With 9 in the shed or something. So, yeah.
Well, and credit to the England team as well for, you know, restricting and putting pressure on the boys. Okay. You know, credit's where credit's due. That's still pretty impressive.
I think credit to you, Andy, because that's the late start. I watched the second one because that was an earlier start, but that was about a bit like last night's game, wasn't it? 3 a.m.
Oh, yeah, it's a tough one. But when you're in lockdown, there is no time. There is no date. There is no days. It just all molds into one.
Nah.
Oh, we're good at staying up at all hours of the morning as well, Ando. And getting on a flight the next day is bloody impressive stuff.
It's up on the boys too, though, isn't it? Like, it makes sense to start with T20s to get the Aussies back into it, but ideally, if you started with 50 over cricket, you're getting more cricket, and then to go back down to T20 series would be easier. But a bit of the loss we put down to England cricketers have played a lot, but we've kept on to number one in the world, which is sort of good, but there's still questions, I reckon.
Oh, we're still the best in the world there, Flynn. I think that's a big, big positive.
Yeah, I agree. England, it was good to see Mitch Marsh finish it off.
Oh, yeah. That was great last night to come in off nothing. So just time in the nets, off quarantine here. You know, it's hard to go out there and perform under pressure straight up. And he's gone in at a pretty tough time again, especially after game one where there were, you know, potential yips for the chase. For him to come in, steady the ship, get it done in a Dan Christian kind of fashion there was awesome. It was awesome, and I'm pumped for him. He's one of the greatest blokes going around.
Cool shot off Mark Wood. Yeah, Woods tried to bounce him. It was about a foot outside off stump. He absolutely nailed that pitch.
And it was great seeing Stoinis up the order as well, you know, batting them around. I think that everyone clicked last night.
Yeah, well, we've seen what he does in the Big Bash. He opens the batting there. He's got the time. He's got the amount of balls to set up his innings. The earlier you get him in, the better. He's been bloody beautiful for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Great to see him at three, and a shame that he got going and didn't capitalize on a situation where he could have got, you know, his first international T20 50.
Yeah.
And the middle order is a constant one. I mean, that's the hard thing in T20 cricket. I mean, you would have seen it in your time in the BBL as well, Andy, isn't it? Like, to have that player that potentially only faces 8 to 10 balls each game, but you want 20 or 25. If you can fill that role, you're going to get gigs.
Yeah,
spot on there, Flem. And I feel like Australia are getting closer to that. I think we really are finding a good middle order there. And if we can, I think, just keep getting games into these guys, it's going to click. Like, I love Stoinis at three. I love Maxi down at five, because I think he is that guy that can come in potentially, you know, with a couple of overs left and get you another 20, 30 runs. Because he's a freak. And I know he's copped a bit of slack, copped a bit of flack this week for a couple of dismissals. But sometimes you've got to take the good and the bad with Maxi. And the reason why he is so good is because he takes on these shots early in his innings and he's able to execute them more often than not. So. Yep. I love what he's doing. I love how he's going about it. I hope he keeps getting that gig down there.
And I suppose, someone who is going well, boys, is Agar's bowling. And if I've seen him hit plenty of sixes, he's not automatically go out there hits it, but if he can just progress his batting a little bit too, because at seven, if your main spinner or second spinner can play that role with the bat, that's an important role, isn't it?
Well, that's what I've seen in T20 cricket, especially with off spinners. I don't reckon there's any out and out off spinners that can't bat. You look at Moeen Ali, Jadeja, these guys that play international cricket that are finger spinners. They can all come in and get a boundary pretty quickly towards the back end, whether they're batting seven or eight. They've got the skill with the bat. I like what Agar's doing at the moment as well. He's really coming in with a lot of intent to score. I know he doesn't get a lot of balls, but again, it's the same thing. If he can come in, he might face five balls, gets 10 runs. That's job done in my eyes. That's awesome.
And Andy, the Poms, they've really improved their white ball cricket, you know, 50 over cricket. Oh. But T20, they can just keep going. Like Tom Curran at 9 or 10, Rashid at 10, you know.
And they've got belief. The Bastards. Yep. They we used to always have that over them. They used to be the choke team, you know. That was yep. so much fun. You know, I used to love that, but it's all changed. They've got belief. They can win at home. And it's a little bit frightening. That's why it was, you know, disappointing that when Australia let that first one crumble so badly, because it was kind of unlike us of yesteryear, but yeah. we've had those worries, those collapses of late, and not controlling games to the end. But I think, obviously, if they play more, it'll improve. But we used to rely on the Poms for that kind of thing, and it seems like they're not doing it, which is a real shame.
Yeah, they've got you're right. They've got that belief, and I think that's come from. I reckon they started this process 4, 5, 6 years ago, where they started building their white ball team around a few blokes, and then they got these games in them, started backing them, and all of a sudden they start performing, and then you start to believe in yourself that you're good enough to play at that level. Because it doesn't matter how many times someone tells you, mate, you're good enough to do this, until you do it and until you believe it yourself. You're never going to think you're there, and you're never going to perform at your peak. So they all look like they believe they should be there, and therefore they're going to come out and play some pretty important games.
And don't underestimate luck in this one. I know you make your own luck, everyone says, but their World Cup win was some of the weirdest stuff going on. They nearly didn't make the finals. Yep. Like, they had that slump before it was just hauling. Everyone was laughing at them, and then they just got it right at the right time and snuck through a few games. The weirdest World Cup win of all time, people will still dispute it because they hit more fours or something. But that catapults belief, and I reckon those little results falling their way, you start to get a bit of run on a momentum. You see it with AFL as well.
Yeah,
you start to believe you can win the close ones. And then it gives you a huge advantage when you're there again.
Did you mention that because Carlton won the close one last night, mate?
No, we're normally on the receiving end of those, bud. But I mean, it's a good case in point, actually. Carlton, over the last few years, if it got close, we're going to lose. You could see them panic. You could see them go, gosh, I can't believe we're still in this game. You know, that was that protective mindset. Where this year it's changed. They've won a bunch of the close ones, probably 60-40 in their favour, which is great and a sign of growth. And I think similarly, our Aussie cricket team at the moment needs to find that belief a little bit to make sure we can close that game.
Yeah,
it's
like a good call. I mean, that belief where you can win from any scenario.
Yeah.
You know, Carlton come back 6 or 7 goals there. You know, it's been a trend, really, with the Australian team. You feel like they back themselves there. One other bloke I wanted to talk about, we've all seen the BBL, but I was talking to an Australian batsman a couple of years ago about facing him, just said it was so tough because he bowls it into the wicket, particularly if you've got to come out and score straight away, is Adil Rashid, who had another dominant series. I don't know if you've faced him much, Pete, but, you know, talking to the Aussie batsman at the time, it was really like you can't afford to have new batsmen come out to him. You know, you want the set batsman to be able to, not necessarily take him down, but not allow him to get wickets and tick it over.
I was actually fortunate enough to play with Adil at Yorkshire for a season. So I got to see firsthand what he would do to opposition teams. And it was just amazing. Like if he got a wicket in his first over and was able to get a new batsman out there, he'd end up with about 3 or 4 wickets in his 4 overs, and the game's done. Like, he just had that control. Guy, it's so hard to score off him. He's got all the tricks, and he's really, really accurate. So, like, it's easy to say, oh, let's just milk him for 6 singles and over and try and target the other guys. But you miss a couple of singles, all of a sudden you then try and hit a boundary to catch up, you get out, and that's 3 or 4 dots in a row. The other bloke's under the pump. Like, he's really, really good. I think at times can be underrated what he's done for the England T20 side and the one day side when he plays.
And that was what's disappointing about game one of the series here. He didn't have a strong game. We were right on top of him. I know that maxi dismissal was it his last ball? I think of his...
Well, he got a wicket on his last ball in all 3 games. And I think it was, like Maxi, Stoin and Smudger. So 3 big wickets as well. So he's,
you know what I'm visualising now? Alfie Langer kicking that rubbish bin
three
times there.
They're all a bit frustrated.
He takes it with him, Andy.
Yeah, because you know, Maxwell's won in game one, but we were well out in front, and you just feel like it's going to be, you know. And look, I know we take that with Max. He struck it okay, but Stoins was really peculiar with the late cut to to first slip.
Yeah, off the middle of that.
You saw that one flip.
Yeah, no, sure.
So yeah, I mean, obviously he has people worried all the way down to his last ball. We talked about that in the rooms with certain players in the Big Bash as well. Narine was one who had a stellar season where he was playing for the Renegades, and it was a matter of, okay, let's make sure we just don't lose wickets to this bloke and take him for six and over. That's it. That's all we need in a T20 game, which seems real unders, or even five and over. Seems real unders. But you're going to be in a better position having your better batsman take on the other guys, which I thought was fascinating being in the rooms talking about that.
That was brilliant. It was great that I think that was actually you that brought that up to the team and told the boys actually how to play these guys just from your experiences. So thanks for that, Andy.
Bit of IP there. And Pete, a bit of BBL news too.
Bit happening in the BBL. The one that's really excited me here, Flemenando, is we have the potential to have our first Indian cricket player in the BBL. Yuvraj Singh, currently sitting at 38 years old, probably going to be 39 by the time BBL starts. Get him in. Let's get him. Let's find a way. This is great.
Yeah, agreed.
No one wears bigger casual sunglasses than Yuvraj. We need those big goggles. Just strutting around the Crown Casino for the stars, I would have thought. But
Can you imagine what
that opens up overseas TV markets too, doesn't it? Like, you know, the Indians don't watch the BBL as much, obviously. There's no Indians playing. You know, we're such a multicultural country, you know, it'd be massive.
Be absolutely huge. I mean, he's got a couple of stats here, 231 T20 domestic matches. That's crazy, and a great experience for anyone who can pick him up if it can happen. Because if he can pass on that knowledge to a few players, that's just awesome. Averaging 25, striking at 130 is good going. Very good going for a guy that comes down in the middle order to lower order as well. So
got onto a couple with Stuart Broad, one over two, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he mentioned that in a tweet a couple of weeks ago. So.
When Broady got 500 wickets, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or something. But, it's interesting. There's been a change, Andy, because the odd name had come up, I know, when I was involved with the Stars. And, you know, as soon as it got progressed, no, BCCI, no. They've allowed women's cricketers to play in T20 comps, but not for the men. But I wouldn't say it's floodgates, but, you know, if you're
right. Why is that, mate? Is it for injury? Is it why wouldn't they have them?
No, these were former players, recent, like Yuvraj, retired from India, but I just think they wanted their IPL to be the premium. And
right.
Probably at odds with what CA have done over the years. You know, the IPL want the best, their own best domestic players playing.
Yeah.
And if you can't see them, the only place you get to see them is in your league. Does that give it more prestige? And, you know, it probably does to a degree, but for the individual, you're not giving him the opportunity, you know, to play in what we think's at least second best T20 league in the world.
Yep. Interesting.
Yep.
And the comms too, Pete.
Yep. Just going to say that we've got, looks like Besto could be coming over, which is exciting. There's been potential rumours he might be going to the Stars, which, if that's the case, that top order is going to be ridiculous, and I'm glad I've left because I probably wouldn't get a game.
Andy, did you just hear that?
Yeah.
What do you mean you've just left?
Mate, might have just left something slip there, Flem.
What?
Funnily enough, I have today announced that I'm actually moving to the Hurricanes and not playing with the Stars anymore, which is absolutely shattering news for myself and the well, I hope the franchise, because I absolutely loved the boys and I loved everyone there. And, you know, you two were stars through and through as well. So
that hurts. That hurts, doesn't it?
We've got a man up here. Good luck, Pete.
And he's done it over Zoom, Damien. Not even face to face.
I did it by text early with a couple of boys, mate.
You're not part of the deal, are you, Andy? You're not stealing the old chief hydration officer,
I've
eh?
I've been asked to go down to Hobart to run drinks. Georgie Bailey was trying to coach me down there with Ridey at one point. Would have been
Frank Faulkner there now. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of ex stars there. Oh, they're good. They're a good team. It's a great little city as well.
Yeah. So, Scotty Boland and Matty Wade, ex stars, mate. We just get down there.
Jeez. Yeah. But it must have been a big decision, though, Pete, in all seriousness. And
yeah.
Role definition or.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of my game, I think it was about opportunity and trying to get myself back into, you know, potential higher honours and showing what I can do. So, you know, with the Hurricanes, I think I'm going to have the opportunity to bat, at least bat top four. And then depending on what happens with Wadey and the international bubble this year, there's also that potential to open the batting. And I think it's hard to knock that back because that's the opportunity that I think I need, and I feel at this time in my career to hopefully, you know, restart something special.
Yeah.
And will you keep then, Pete, if Wadey's in that bubble?
Well, they've also got Benny McDermott as well, so and potentially a couple of other.
Yeah, Doran. They've got 22 keepers.
Yeah. It's impressive.
It's insane down there.
I think it's a prerequisite, actually, to play for the Hurricanes. You have to be a keeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Pete couldn't even find the gloves in my brother's team, so it's going to be tough.
I keep getting knocked out of these. I'll turn up there, I've got my gloves. I'm like, I'm ready to go, guys. You know, how about it? And they just go, nah, nice try, mate. Not today.
Mate, well, congratulations. I'll be wishing you well and keeping close eye on it. And I understand, and Billy Stanley, because you don't have to face him in the nets.
Yeah, thank God for that, Ando. That's the one I was really excited about is there's a trade. We've had another trade in the BBL. Frankie Worrell for Billy Stanlake. And, yeah, good timing to leave because Big Bill comes bustling in at 140 to 150 and doesn't pitch too many up. So I'm petrified in the nets at the best of times. So it's going to be good just to miss that one, you know.
It could be a bit of a win, isn't it? Like with the bigger boundaries, Billy bowling short, you know, you've got to take him on, big shot, and then Frankie already playing Shield cricket in South Australia can get the ball and swing it early.
Yeah, I think that's a really good trade for both teams, to be perfectly honest. Like you said, big boundary square at the MCG. Billy's natural length is shorter rather than fuller. So when he bowls his best, and I think when he bowls his fastest, it's going over the top of the stumps, which is hard for batsmen to hit back over his head. So with that extra size, especially in comparison to Adelaide, which is very short square, I think this is a great move for Billy. And then with Frankie, he looks to pitch it up because he's a swing bowler. So he's going to swing the ball both ways, look to pitch it up. Adelaide have longer boundaries straight. So again, you're pitching it up. If batsmen are trying to look to hit over his head, that's going to be a tougher shot to actually clear the rope. So I think that's a great move for him as well.
Yeah, well, that was Andy. Pete's News Week. I think we'll stick with that one, Pete. Short.
Yeah, no, that's not short and sweet, mate.
Now, another segment here, Andy. We got one of your mates, Limo, to pick a theme cricket 11 last week. He doubled up. Yep. What have you got for us this week, Andy?
I want to put together the bald 11.
Yes.
Now, they have to have committed to being bald. Obviously, I don't want your Warnies.
No
interest. Your Gangoolies, your punters. No, it's not the thinning 11.
What do you mean, punter?
This is not the thinning 11. It's the bald 11. Okay? Need to get some clarification on a few people, though, as I go through. I'm thinking a T20 team I'm trying to put together. Callis, are we allowing him? He held on for a while. Are we allowing him as a bald, or do you reckon he didn't quite play his best as a bald guy?
What's Jack doing currently?
I think he's bald now, isn't he?
I think he's rocking it. Yeah, I think he's taking it off.
He's gone Jason Statham, Bruce Willis. So
I'll take that.
Okay, Callis, okay. Okay, so let me start with, I think, I mean, again, just to put some pals in here as well, I thought Quiney Dunk to open. I know it's two left-handers, but that's helpful. Callis, then, if we're going to allow it, we've got the choice of Callis and Herschel or Herschel Gibbs at three.
Ooh.
What are you thinking, guys?
Well, Jack, you know, gives you a bowling option.
Yeah.
Gibbsy, brilliant in the field and loose.
But I feel Gibbs took on the bald head a lot earlier than Callis. Yeah.
And that should be taken into consideration, Pete. Spot on. So. Well, let's go with both of them. Let's push. We might be able to find a bench then, and we can rearrange. But let's go. Would we go Callis 3, Gibbs 4, or the other way around?
Other way around.
Okay.
Yep.
Ben Lynn. Chris Lynn. Obviously, we can't miss out on him. Wicket keepers I found tough. Matt Prior committed to being bald. He came out and played some T20 out here.
Did he play Stars, or was it before that with the Vicks?
No, he didn't play Stars. Who did he play with? He played with Sydney Sixers, didn't he?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought he was a Sydney team.
Okay. Can't remember. But anyway, Prior could be our keeper unless you guys can think of another one.
Gee, I mean, that's one sign of Australian wicket keepers, that they like them with hair.
Exactly. That's why Pete's such a good chance to get the nod. What a great rug that Hanscom's running with.
I reckon I'm in the thinning 11 there, and that's what I've got hat on.
I'm trying to think when – I reckon we might have to go back to Bird Oldfield in the body line.
Would you take an AB de Villiers who has come into the ball very, very late in his career?
Nah. He's not known for baldness at the moment.
The good thing about the bald 11 is you can have a development 11 because you know they're on the way.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a good career path.
Okay, so for my offie, there's a few options. Obviously, Moinelli.
Yeah.
Agar. They're probably going for the same spot. And then they obviously go to the batting as well. But then Michael Beer in his heyday. I'd be ashamed to miss out on Beery as well. So we've got some decisions there, but there's three choices. I also thought maybe Darren Lehman should sit in there at six perhaps as well.
I thought you were going to say Boof.
Boof's got to be in there. But again, when we talk about...
He's ending up in a lot of 11s, the Beer 11, the Bald 11.
He's just an all-round player. He's on and off the field. He knows what he's doing.
Funny enough, the Boof, I don't know if you know, but the nickname Boof is from Buffont. Because as a young fella, he had the big Buffont.
That's not even better. Yeah. So then we've also got Nathan Lyon as an opportunity for the wrist spin as well. So really tough. Beery, obviously left arm, but Lyon, Agar, Moinelli, tough decision for us there. Chris Harris has to probably get in there. I know it seems strange, but what a great one-day all-round player. If he was around he'd be a very high-paid T20 player if he was just a little younger, I reckon.
Yeah.
His little 120 kilometre an hour, straight sliding little nippers. And he was a bit like Bevo with the bat. He could get things done. He was unlucky that T20 was invented after his time. But I thought I'd like to put him in there. Didn't find room for Nasser Hussain or Andrew Strauss. Just, I don't think flamboyant enough for a T20 side, but what do you guys think?
Well, compare that. You're comparing the current England one-day white ball team T20. Yeah. I was bowling to Atherton, Hussain, batsmen like that. They were maxing out at 220 in 50 overs, so I can't. Yeah.
I can't get it.
No, you've made the right decision there.
Here's the tough one. I mean, we don't have a lot of fast bowling stocks. obviously we've got big Johnny Hastings at his heyday. Yeah. He Bollinger. Yeah. He did commit. that would probably have to go to a review board to see whether he's allowed, because he did commit to the rug for a lot longer than he should have, but in more recent times.
Did you ever see that when they did a Snicko, and they went into the pack and they actually picked up Dougie's ball patch in the IPL?
Oh, no.
So, again, not a lot of fast bowlers. I might have the name wrong, but Timo Best. He's bald, and he was particularly quick at times as well. He seemed to be a bit loose at times, though.
Loose. And loves referring to himself in the third person.
Right.
Which Flem loves. So, if you got Tino Best and Bollinger opening the bowling, it is loose.
There's some fire, but also there's also not a lot of accuracy. So it puts a lot of pressure on our spin bowlers and maybe Johnny Hastings. But can you think of any other quick bowlers that are bowl?
I've got one, but not well known. But a Jade Herrick played a lot of state cricket.
Yep.
Rocked a headband, even though he was bald. So not entirely sure what was going on there, because
We could save it for the tattoo 11 too, Jakey.
Both of his legs full of cartoon characters.
But the sweat starting at the top of your scone, picking up momentum. All of us just have sweat starting kind of mid-brow. He would have it right at the top of the crown, and that sweat would be coming down at a rate of knots. So maybe the headband was worth it. The other one, Dimi Mascarenhas, a great ball player. He's, at the moment, he's not bald. He's actually got himself a nice short back and side, and it's fine. So he was going bald by choice, and I'm just not sure whether that's allowed.
What a wonderful T20 player, Dimi, and he's just got himself unselected.
Can't have that.
No, exactly. So
we'll tag him in this, I reckon, Dimi.
I've gone more than 11 there, but that's what I'm seeing at the moment.
Well, I reckon you've got your quicks. I just think we need to make a call on your spinner. Agar, Beer, Moanelli.
Nathan Lyon.
Who do you want?
Surely, well, in my eyes, there's only one choice. I think you know who that is.
Beery.
Oh, yeah.
I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Because he hung in there a bit. Ashton just got rid of it.
We spoke about it earlier, about the average bloke being able to play cricket. If he's not the average bloke, then I don't know who is.
Exactly. I think you two were both talking about hiding him on the 45, I remember correctly, if I'm right in saying. Yeah, we definitely have to hide him at a short third man or just around the corner. But it'd be worthwhile. Also, just seeing how angry he gets when he gets hit for four, I'm pretty excited to have that in my team.
Pete, we're happy with that.
Stoked with that.
We get that 11 going. That'll take on Beer 11s and Hates 11. Andy, that's just quality, mate. Thanks. Absolute quality.
Great pleasure. Yeah. Chris Harris, I think, will be the most excited to be back out there.
He's back in. Dimi will be. I wouldn't be surprised if Dimi listens to this and it's gone.
Yeah.
The next day. Gone. Yeah. I tell you what's gone. It's gone quickly, and that's pretty much it for the Bowlology Report. I just want to give a shout-out, Pete, to our one Cambodian listener during the week. It was from Phnom Penh Cricket, and I looked up
Phnom Penh. There.
What is it?
Phnom Penh.
Phnom Penh. Have you been there?
No, just a Phnom. Phnom Penh.
Phnom. Yeah. Oh, I thought there was an F. Phnom Penh. And if the one listener, I reckon it is. I reckon it's Shivam Singh, who just punched out 42 off 25 balls for the Cambodia Board 11 to get them over the line. Shivam, this was for you. We'll be back next week. We'll wrap up the one-day series. IPL starting. The Aussie girls are taking on the Kiwis. I think we're going to go out with Dwayne Bravo's Champion, because we've had a champion on today. Andy Lee, thank you very much.
Great fun. Good to see you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.